Welcome, money buddies, to this week's episode of Money Talk. This week, we're talking about getting out of money pits, overcoming shame, and building momentum. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming, and let's get talking. Today, we're going to discuss some things on the show that a lot of people have struggled with, which is mainly shame around money. We've all felt it. We've all struggled with it, so initially here, just realize you're not alone. It's okay to feel stress and shame and all those kind of negative emotions that you feel around money. Today's Money Buddy and I are going to help you overcome that today. We're going to talk about some great insights into confronting and overcoming shame and getting out of these money pits that we all feel so stuck in, whether it's credit card debt, whether it's feeling like you just are stuck forever living paycheck to paycheck. How can you turn your mindset into your superpower and feel optimistic and confident about your money? We're going to talk about that in today's interview because getting stuck with your money can be one of the most frustrating things. It can be so difficult and so challenging if you just feel like you're not going anywhere. If you just feel like you're spinning your tires or you're running in place, right? It feels like you're running in a dream where it's super slow motion and you're not getting anywhere. Well, I'm excited for today's episode to really excite and encourage all of us to do better with our money and figure out how we can use our mindset as a superpower and be optimistic instead of shameful and upset about our money. Quick mention here before I get into today's introduction, please make sure to go check out Financial Planning for Young Adults, my brand new podcast that focuses specifically on making financial an easy and approachable topic for young adults. If you are a young adult or know one in your life who could use some really great financial planning and financial advice, please head over to the show notes and check out Financial Planning for Young Adults. There's some great episodes coming out over on my brand new show. Let's get into today's episode with an introduction of today's money buddy, Grace Del Rey. Grace is a financial strategist, sound healer, and founder of SGBS Consulting and the Saving Grace Money Method. She blends business strategy with mindset and energy work to help entrepreneurs heal their relationship with money, release financial stress, and build abundance from the inside out. This week's money talking points are: what are some common financial pain points? 2, how can we confront financial shame? And 3, how can money shame impact everyone regardless of their financial status? With those money talking points in mind, let's get talking and welcome Grace to the show.
Hi, everyone. Good to meet you.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun conversation. This is a topic that I like to bring up every now and then, every couple episodes, around the shame we feel with money and overcoming that shame, overcoming some of those, what we're going to call them as money pits today, and where you can kind of get stuck with your money and overcoming the emotional baggage that comes with that as well. Grace, we're going to start off here with our money talking points. And just for everyone listening, those are the talking points that you can share with a friend or a family member to go start your own money talk after this episode. So you're going to hear Grace and I kind of give an example of how some of these conversations can go. And then I want everyone listening to take them and share them with a friend or family member. But first question I have for you here, Grace, are what are some common financial pain points that you've noticed?
Oh, gosh, there's lots of them. If you wanted to start a budget and then you're like, well, what's the point of starting a budget? Because I kind of know what's going on in my head. You have some intuition of where things are flowing. But until you see it on paper, you don't know where you're bleeding money. Mm-hmm. You don't know, like, you could easily accumulate $600 in subscriptions for Hulu and Netflix and all of the different subscriptions. And you're like, where's all my money going? It might be going to subscriptions and you're not aware of it because it's just automatically hitting your bank account or automatically hitting your credit card. Some people get into a trap with their credit card and that they are actually using it to pay for their lifestyle. And so their money that they come in from their paycheck or from their company goes immediately to the credit card and there's nothing left over. And then they're not actually putting money away into savings. So then that becomes a bigger pain point because it's cyclical. It's very dangerous because you're thinking, oh, well, you know, I live on $5,000 a month, say, for easy numbers. But in reality, you might be living on $6,000 to $8,000 to $10,000. And every month you're accumulating $2,000 to $3,000 to $4,000 more in credit card debt. And the interest on that is eating away at your future because the average American is spending anywhere between $3,000 to $4,000 in interest payments to credit cards a year. And if they were putting that into savings in 10 years, it could easily be $66,000 if invested conservatively. Mm-hmm. And that's your future. That's a future house payment. That's something that can be added on to again and again. And that's where you're sliding backwards in accumulating that debt. So that becomes a real big pain point. And then there's your relationship with money. Because if you, for example, don't, I know some clients who they're like, you know, they're thinking like, oh, making an extra dollar, I get a dollar raise. That dollar raise adds up. But if you're spending way more than what you're bringing in, you're always going to be behind the eight ball, and they're used to being behind the eight ball. And once you're used to being behind the eight ball, you think, oh, it's no big deal. I'll just make it work out. Therefore, when it's time to retire or have a break, you can't have it.
Yeah.
Or do anything. You can't go on that vacation. You can't buy that house or buy that car that's actually going to get you to work. That'll be reliable versus the borrowed car or the situation where you're always moving the dice around.
Yeah, you keep moving the same money around all over the place. Like you're doing credit card balance transfers and stuff. You just keep shifting it just so it looks a little bit different, but really it's all the same problem you're dealing
with. Instead of going, okay, like how do we really, really attack this in a way that's meaningful, that's going to have an impact, and then I can see an actual, like, I'm actually moving towards that goal.
Mm-hmm. Instead of just spinning your wheels, essentially. Like if you've ever been in a car or whatever, and you're on some ice and you just feel how you're not going anywhere, that's the kind of thing that credit card debt can get you into. And I liked what you mentioned there, that eventually like this $2,000 extra a month or whatever is just going to slowly catch up to you. Because if you are using your credit cards in a way that's just to put your spending on them and you're paying them off every single month, you know that your credit cards have an insanely high credit balance. And that balance, if it's filled up, eventually it's just going to stop. But they give you such a high balance to start that is so dangerous if you're not careful. Because I think my wife and I have just one of our credit cards that has like a $15,000 limit. It's just this trap that they're trying to get us in. Thankfully, we use them responsibly. But you outlined one of the main traps that so many people find themselves in is just living on a monthly payment. And then you can't take the opportunity to change jobs. You can't quit your job for a couple months because you're burnt out and you need to slowly start looking for another job. There's so many things that come from just getting stuck in that pit of credit card debt.
Yeah. Not to mention if you get sick.
Mm-hmm. If you can't work, what do you do?
Yeah. If you have a chronic illness or an injury and you can't work, and yes, I know, like they're like, oh, well, you can use bankruptcy. Yes, bankruptcy is there as a safe valve, but
who wants to do that? We're getting to an area where if people are dealing with this level of either they're in that money pit, like we were talking about, of credit card debt or feeling like they have to work, maybe they can't keep up with their bills, there can be some real shame behind this. And that's why one of the first things that I always encourage people to do is if you can just get to a point where you aren't paycheck to paycheck and you at least have like a one paycheck buffer or a month buffer, like I call that like the first stage of financial independence, because that's what really allows you to take a deep breath and just kind of think, what do I want to do with my money? Even just in a small sense, like you don't have enough to just be throwing like tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars into investing. But there's such a huge difference that even $2,000 or $3,000 can make in a person's life, and getting this feeling of shame and guilt and this burden off their back around their money. How do we begin to confront this shame so that we can move forward?
One is that the moment that you decide to take action, stop shaming yourself. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds like, oh, that's how I motivate myself. You don't have to motivate yourself by beating yourself up. It doesn't help you in any way, shape, or form. It just makes you feel bad. And who wants to feel bad? I personally don't want to feel bad
right.
about, you know, like there's so many things to feel bad about. I don't want to make myself feel bad. It actually stops the flow of energy and your commitment to go the next step. Motivation and the ability to address things, you're more likely to come to it with honey than with a bat and mm-hmm. a belt to beat yourself up. Because the flogging itself actually deters you from actually making movement forward in actually looking at your numbers. Because the first step is to just try to figure out, like, where are you? Like, what does it really look like? How big is the credit card debt? How many loans do you have? If you didn't have the education, going back to how did you learn to use money? If the person that taught you how to deal with money didn't know how to deal with money, you're just inherited how they dealt with money. And God bless them, they did the best they could with what they knew. And now you now need to know what to do with what you know. Like right now, the best time in terms of knowledge, because you can look up different strategies and figure out what strategy works the best for you. So you don't have to be like beholden to inheriting how your parents or your guardian or whoever taught you about money, or you taught yourself how to kind of make it work, to stop and go like, okay, what actually works? Mm-hmm. And finding those guardrails so that you can actually start going, okay, let me start digging myself out of this.
Yeah. And there's a lot of power in that. Let's stop for a second and look what's not working. And the whole thing around financial shame, right? A lot of that comes from our past. And whether it's how your parents taught you to handle money because they had no idea how to handle money, so naturally you have no idea how to handle money, the shame may be coming from that. And if that's the case, like, maybe you just need to let that go and accept that what happened happened, and let's move forward and figure out a plan to move forward and understand that I'm not going to hold this big grudge over my parents because they taught what they knew, and now I can move forward and change it. I think that's a great way to confront shame, is to accept that whatever happened happened, put it behind you, and try to look forward for a system that works. That's one of my favorite things in my financial planning background, is there's a million different systems that we could use. You could use an envelope method where you're using actual physical cash. I don't know the last time I paid for something with cash, so that wouldn't work for me. But for other people, maybe it would. Maybe they love cash, they love the physical feeling, and that really helps them mentally know how much money they have. For me, it's all in a spreadsheet because I'm a huge nerd. For some people, maybe it's a nice app that looks clean and simple. And some people may, I don't know, there's so many different options out there. And I think that's such a great way to move forward, is to just begin researching and try to find one that works for you. One thing that I want to mention there too is, whether you're very wealthy and you are okay with money and your financial status, you would maybe call great, right? That's how you define it yourself. Or maybe you're in a situation where your financial status is poor or broke or whatever term you'd like to use. How does this money shame thing that we just talked about impact everyone across that spectrum of financial status?
I've worked with clients who have no money and came from no money, and that making a decision to go from a supermarket on one side of the street to another supermarket on the other side of the street because they got 50 cents more was like one extreme, where it's a multi-trust family that has a lineage and legacy money, and they have shame around money and how they're raising their kids and what they're doing with their money and the decisions that they're making. And when they experienced a tightening, it may not have been like, oh, it's not a tightening where they're like managing like $2,000 or $3,000 or even $200 or $300. They're managing like, okay, they were used to managing 4 million. Now they're managing 2 million, but their lifestyle was on 4 million. So whether they had, in both scenarios, there's a contraction of what they can manage. And yes, the one at 2 million might be able to like have a nicer like grocery. You still have the stress of, I have to make some serious decisions of what do we actually need versus what we want, and being able to make decisions for our children. People are used to, I think another one is an ego thing that comes in where, oh, you have money, therefore you're going to pay the bill. And it was like working with this person to realize like, hey, everybody gets to pay the bill. If we're all going out to an expensive dinner, it's possible that everybody should pay the bill, and you don't have to pay the bill every time. It's a ego surge to pay for it, obviously. But if it's like becomes a thing, then you're just giving. You're not allowing somebody else to show up. Let somebody else show up and practice the art of receiving. Because I think to some degree, whether you're giving in charity or whether you're giving to your family or whether you're giving to your friends by taking them out to dinner, you can overgive, and that's a reflection of your self-worth, because I'm not worth receiving.
Yeah. And there's the self-worth comment. We're going to talk about that more later, but I do want to talk a little bit more about some of these money pits that we can get stuck in. And before we move on to that, I liked what you shared there about how, whether you're someone who is maybe has money and so you're giving a lot more, or you're someone who doesn't, like, there's still all these relative emotions that everyone can feel wherever they're at in their money journey, but it's all relative. So you do have to be careful when it comes to comparing yourself to situations that are obviously involving more money than yours, but you don't really know the whole story. So we just have to be careful if we are looking at the millionaire who is now a half millionaire or whatever, right? We have to be careful not to let like this comparison game creep in, because that's just going to keep you stuck with money as well, because then you're just going to continually think that you're worse off and you're not going to try as hard with your own situation.
Yeah, no, I agree. It is definitely a look upon of like, yeah, this is how it's going to play out. You don't want to get into compare despair because you don't know the situation. There was a point in my life where my husband at the time had a business and we got sued by somebody that they used the legal system as a means to make money. Mm-hmm. Meaning that they had 10 lawsuits going at any one time. And from the outside, they were living in Beverly Hills and they had gobs and gobs of money. And they were suing over something because they didn't want to pay the last 10% of their. And that was the game that they played. They could out-lawyer you. It wasn't whether they were right or wrong. They could just out-lawyer you.
They knew the system and could game it.
They knew the system and they knew it well. And I was like, this is just pure evil. What it ended up doing as we tried to fight it as a couple is that my ex-husband developed a heart arrhythmia. It was in and out of the hospital from this situation because he had put his heart and soul into like doing the remodel for this person. And to have them not pay the last 10%, which was easily $200,000. And then we had to pay another $300,000 in legal fees. So that was $500,000 that we had to battle only to end up then settling because we couldn't continue.
Wow. That's crazy.
I couldn't carry it and he couldn't work because he was in and out of hospitals. So we settled to this person who didn't deserve it, but he just outlawed us. So those circumstances, like you can go, oh, well, you could have controlled this. You could have controlled that. But the truth is, until you're in the situation, you don't know what happened. If you get that horrible diagnosis of cancer, and there's one person in your family that's the breadwinner and he got the cancer, your business and your lifestyle is going to be suddenly changed and you're going to find yourself in a different situation. And so you can never really compare and despair of like, oh, if I had this or that, because it's each of us on our own little journey and we're about discovering how to create our reality.
It's all unique. It's all our own situation. I mean, hearing that lawyer story, I'm mad for you. I couldn't imagine the emotions I would feel going through that, but you can't compare your situation to anyone listening. You were throwing around numbers that were very large, right? Like $200,000, $300,000. We have to make sure to realize that money's unique and we're not ever in the exact same situation as someone else. So we have to be careful in comparison. That's always a tricky game we have to play and watch out for. I do want to help people begin to move on and take some steps towards getting unstuck. Maybe they're in, let's talk about that credit card cycle. That's a pretty big one that people find themselves in. How do we begin to take some steps to get unstuck from that cycle and that really deep money pit of credit card debt?
One of the best situations is come up with a plan to get to a cash basis.
Like I said, with a buffer where you have some money.
Get a buffer and then also get to cash because then you're only spending what you have. You're just not spending on credit cards. You stop the credit card. And then you can actually start looking at, like I have a whole program called Love Yourself Rich, which we start putting, you know, if you have 3 or 4 or 5 or 1 credit card, whatever you have, we start putting it onto a spreadsheet and figuring out where the interest rates are so that we can start figuring out what you need to pay off first and start to come up with a plan to get the credit card debt down and get off of it almost exclusively until you get to a point where if you charge on your credit card, you can be disciplined enough to pay it off at the end of the month. So that you're not accruing more credit card debt.
Yeah. And that buffer and that cash point that you talked about getting to is so pivotal because if there's one way to stay in credit card debt, it's continue using your credit cards. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You can't say, I want to get out of credit card debt and then continue to use them just because it's so hard to wrap your mind around to go back to what you opened this conversation with of like that mental accounting and trying to mental budget. You're going to mentally guess your numbers wrong, right? You need to actually keep track of the numbers. And when it comes to credit cards, having a spreadsheet that you lay out your interest rates, your minimum payments, all that sort of stuff. And if the word spreadsheet scares you a little bit, there's so many professionals, coaches, planners, debt counselors that would help you just in a heartbeat, just set up a simple plan to get out of that debt. But the first step, like you mentioned, is always stop using them and get to a point where there's cash. Have you seen, maybe in your life, have you seen that buffer or that ability to have some cash to do something, whether it's get out of credit card debt or whatever it may be? How have you seen that buffer potentially help you in your life?
The buffer allows you to like sit and think and then also strategize because whether it's borrowing money from a family member or borrowing credit from them for a second to move over, you can get a 0% interest, like playing the 0% interest game, but not spending on any of the cards can help. But then first you have to, before you can go to the cash, you have to understand what cash do I need?
Yeah.
Like if I don't know really technically what I need, then I need to like sit and like think about that. So it may be sitting in the muck for a minute, you know, but spending the time to figure out exactly what you need and then look at where you can cross things out that you're really not taking advantage of, all the subscriptions that aren't working for you that you really don't need, and then start really whittling it down to like, if you're throwing half your groceries out.
That's a huge one. People don't realize how much money is just going straight in the trash.
Right in the trash because they didn't eat the food because they didn't order it out or they didn't plan out how they're going to spend the week. And now they've got all this food in their fridge that's going bad that then they end up throwing away. So looking at what is that?
I recently did a podcast episode where I did some research around the problem of food waste. And I believe the stat was that the average American family wastes $2,000 a year on food that they throw out. And when you hear that number, if you begin to put 10 hours of work into figuring out a meal plan system where you can actually eat the food you buy, there's not a person out there that wouldn't work for that kind of an hourly rate. I'm so glad you mentioned that because there's those little areas that people so often overlook that can really get you some big momentum to get out of debt or whatever money pit you're stuck in. I want to continue helping people get out of these money pits that they're stuck in. We've talked about credit card debt a lot. Let's maybe move away from some of the shame pieces and maybe some of these sad feelings we feel around money. How do we begin to feel optimistic about our money? How do we look towards a brighter future with our money?
I really do believe in mindset and affirmations. I know that some people are like, oh, affirmations, they're like blah, blah, blah. But there's actually a lot of neuroscience behind affirmations and speaking and writing them out, that they train your brain for possibilities. And I know from my own experience, like 30 years ago, I was in a brain spiral because I was like, we don't have rent. I was living paycheck to paycheck. You know, it was very early 20s. And I was like, how am I going to get out of this pay? Like, I'm scrambling for pennies down in the well of my car, looking to like pay for gas to get to this thing so I can get to this job. And your mind spirals out of control. And I learned early on when my then husband and I almost went homeless was because he was out of a job and the money that I was bringing in was limited. I had a low self-esteem, so I wasn't charging my worth for the accounting work that I was doing at the time. It was like really pennies on the dollar. And I was running around all over the place trying to get this money. The more I thought, oh my God, I'm going to be homeless. And the more I spiraled, like was it coincidental? Because the more I thought about it, clients weren't paying, or they did pay, their check bounced. They, you know, like it was like this compounding negative thing that kept building on top of each other. I then came across this woman at a networking meeting called Shelly Campbell, and she wrote the book Wealthy Spirit. And it was about 365 days of affirmations that you put into practice. And she had this course, the Wealthy Spirit course, and I wanted to take it. But of course, I'm like, I don't even have money to pay rent in 2 weeks. I can't take this course. I knew inside my gut, I was like, I need this course. I need this lady. I'm crying to her on the phone, bawling my eyes out. And I was like, is there any way, can I make a payment plan? Can I, you know, and she was really good at holding her boundaries. She's like, no.
Wow. Yeah, which is impressive.
And I was like, really? Really? Because I'm dying here. And she was like, no, but you can. She's like, can you afford $12? And I was like, yeah, I can afford $12. She's like, go buy my book. I was like, what? A book's going to answer my questions? She's like, yeah, go buy my book. I want you to put into practice doing daily affirmations. Let me know how it goes in a week. Call me back in a week. And I was like, okay, what do I got to lose?
Yeah.
I spent the money. I got the book. I started practicing the affirmations, and I think it was during that time Law of Attraction had just come on to the scene back then, 30 years ago. And so I started putting into play like, okay, let me just start doing it like a mantra. Mm-hmm. Because what I realized as I was doing it as a mantra, I could not think about the homeless people. I could only think about my clients praise and pay me. I'm a money magnet. Money flows easily and effortlessly to me. And I would just be saying it like an incantation over and over and over again. So if I'm sitting in the grocery line and I'm worried about, is my debit card going to go through? No, I'm a money magnet. I'm a money magnet. I'm a money magnet. And you think, oh, that's got to be nuts. But in a week, not only did I have rent for the next month, but I actually had the money to pay her to take her course.
And your brain stopped spiraling. Like you just
and I stopped confident. Spiraling. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I started and money started to flow in. So you are a magnet. And what you put out, you will attract. So if I'm putting out that I don't have money and I'm in lack and it's really hard to earn money and I really take it on, then I'm blocking the flow. Then my brain wants to be right. Like whose brain doesn't want to be right?
It's going to naturally do what it needs to do to make these ideas in your brain work.
So if I'm constantly saying I'm not going to have enough money, I don't have enough money, your brain's going to be like, right, I'm going to make sure that you don't have enough money because you want to be right that I don't have enough money. You're self-fulfilling it. So by being able to be very mindful and switch the story, when you catch yourself saying, I don't have enough money, you stop yourself and you go, no, I'm a money magnet. You start going into the rhetoric of affirmations, come up with 5 easy ones, like less than 5 words, so that you can put it to a positive current, I am, or I already have plenty. Then your mind goes and it re-scripts itself. And it takes a minute for it to shift. But once it shifts, you'll be like, wow, this was so easy. Mm-hmm. How can it be so easy? Then you'll create another story. You might even get bored and then create some drama to remind yourself, get back into being positive and creating your reality in that sense.
There's a lot of power that comes with just our identity and what we think of ourselves. And one of the ways that I like to help people paint that picture is just tracking your net worth a little bit helps you see that, oh, if I do these things, I'm moving in the right direction. And your brain's going to naturally start doing those things where you're like, oh, I didn't realize I actually had $300 extra because before you weren't thinking about it, that $300 extra just went out the window through a drive-through to get coffee or food or fast food or whatever it might be. And when you just start noticing these things and surrounding yourself with little triggers or ideas or just like your motto that you always tell yourself, your mind, it's really powerful and will just start working in the right ways for you. And that's really interesting to just see play out in everyone's lives. I do want to touch on here as we're heading towards the end of our time. You mentioned the term self-worth. And one of the questions I want to ask you is that you say that money mirrors our self-worth. And I imagine we might go down a similar route of these affirmations and saying what we want to do with our money. But what do you mean by this money mirroring our self-worth?
Like, for example, if you own a business and you're setting your prices, there's a dear friend of mine who decided to change careers and he went into doing construction around this rural area, right? And in his mind, he was like, getting $30 an hour is a good amount of money. Well, if you did some research, you might see that actually $65 to $95 is the average hourly rate for an independent person to come in and do some handiwork around the house. And if you don't price yourself right, he'll get the $30 for the 4 hours, maybe he'll get $120. Well, if you take that by 5, it's not good. You may not work every day. So then you're going to make enough money to put gas in your car to get to the next job, to make enough money to put maybe food on the table, but
forget
never
about supplies and your business. And
You're not covering your insurance. You're not covering your health insurance. You're not covering all your bills. You're just charging because you think, well, nobody can pay that. You assume your lack or where you are, other people can't afford more.
Yeah.
Like you might do a really fantastic job, better than anybody else, but you don't know that because you don't have enough experience to like go and look. And so I often find that a lot of independent workers underprice themselves and price themselves in a situation like if somebody doesn't pay, they end up
it's terrible.
They can't pay their stuff. Mm-hmm. And then that's the other thing is like, if they're a really nice person and they have that nice gene, they're like, the person tells them, oh, I don't have your money. I'll pay you next time. And you're like, okay, next time's a month from now. How am I going to pay this, that, and the other? And you'd be like, oh, well, they had a hard day and they need it more. So I'll wait. I have a little extra savings. I'll wait. And next thing you know, you don't have anything else. And now you're like biting your nails, hoping this person's going to come through. And what if they don't? You have to have enough self-worth and enough self-worth to have boundaries to say, in order for me to stay in business, I have to say no. Mm-hmm. And that's what Chelly Campbell taught me.
That's what I was going to say. 30
years ago, is you have to say no. Mm-hmm. As good as their story is.
Yeah, I really like that idea because, yeah, most people will underprice themselves if you're starting your own business or doing your own thing. And guess what? Most people, if you tell them an amount that is way too high, they'll say so. But if you tell them an amount that's way too low, they're just going to accept it, right?
They're going to be like, oh,
I'll pay $100 for a $1,000 service. Sure, like I'll do that all day. But if you tell them $2,000 and they think it should be around $1,000, they'll let you know where the value may more appropriately lie. Negotiate with you a little bit there. So yeah, I really like that idea is if you're starting your own thing, push yourself to ask for a little bit more money. And I think one of the ideas that's continually been coming into my mind here is the power of community and having people around us that we can talk to either to get us motivated and get us out of these pits that we get stuck in where maybe we're spiraling and someone else's story can help motivate you and get you going again. Or if it's figuring out pricing and how much should this service be worth, because it's hard to do that on your own. If you're anchoring to this scarcity mindset where you've never had enough to really make ends meet and you think, wow, I can't believe someone would pay me $30 an hour. I've only ever worked $12 an hour jobs. That can be such a tricky point. But if you talk to someone and realize it's a $90 an hour job, then that gives you a whole lot more confidence.
And it's the same thing with asking for a raise, because sometimes you come in at entry level and your employer may not ever give you a raise unless you actually ask for it.
Yeah, and ask often, honestly, because it usually takes a month or two before they can make it. Like if you're working in some sort of environment where there's like an office and a hierarchy and everything like that, it might take a little while. So don't be afraid to prime the conversation on a raise and get it started, because it might not happen right away. But if you ask, it may happen in a good amount of time that if you wouldn't have asked, it would have never happened. So that's also a really good one to mention for people who are working a job where they're being paid by someone instead of trying to work on their own. But Grace, this has been a fantastic episode. We've talked about a whole lot of things, helping people get unstuck with their money, overcoming shame, feeling optimistic, and maybe pricing themselves better or asking for a raise. But two final questions I have for you here. The first one's going to be, where can people connect with you online?
I have a website called sgdsconsulting.com. And on there, you can look at all the different offerings I have, like Love Yourself Rich course. And there's also a form to actually reach me.
Perfect.
And you can book one-on-one with me.
Perfect. The link for that will be in the show notes, of course, where you can always go to find anything we've mentioned today. But last question I have here for you, Grace, if there is one thing that from what we talked about today that you wish you knew when you were just getting started, what would that be?
I would have loved somebody to like explain compounding interest and to actually help start me early.
Yeah. And if everyone listening thinks that that $1,000 or $2,000 buffer where you have a paycheck saved is really comfortable and nice, getting to a point where you have that nice buffer after 20 or 30 years of consistent saving, that's when just a world of opportunities open up for people. And I love helping people see that, yeah, compound interest is a huge thing that we all need to take advantage of. But Grace, this has been a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much to Grace for coming on the podcast. That was a really fun and exciting conversation, and I hope all of you listening were able to take something away from it. The one thing that I want to wrap up here with is one of the questions that we didn't get to in today's interview, which is, in what ways does being proactive about money benefit us? Well, the ways that it can benefit us are countless. You get ahead of trouble. You can get ahead of things that are seemingly emergencies and really figure out your financial situation so that you can weather those storms. You can do a whole lot more with your money if you're being proactive versus reactive. When you're being reactive, you're just doing what other people want you to do with your money. Reactive is buying things because they're on sale. Proactive is planning to buy something that you need or even potentially want, but the key piece in there is planning. And then you notice it's on sale and then you purchase it. Proactivity will help us in every single area of our money, from saving, spending, making money, using our money for good, giving our money away, saving money and investing it. Really, every area of our money is helped tremendously, especially when it comes to our income and what we're going to do with it. Really helps you a lot by setting up your savings goals first instead of last. It's the whole idea of pay yourself first, right? That's what applies here. If we pay ourselves first, then we're being proactive and we can get ahead of our spending. And guess what? Your lifestyle is going to adjust. I think people underestimate your own ability to adapt when you're being proactive, and you're going to figure out that you can use your money in ways that you actually want to use it versus reactivity and spending it in the ways that everyone else wants you to use your money. All these marketing agencies and sales companies want you to spend your money a certain way. And if you're being reactive, you're going to find yourself spending money in those ways. But if you're being proactive, You're going to figure out a way just naturally to adjust and use your money in a way that works for you. Trust me when I say that you will be able to adapt and adjust to your financial circumstance. That's what's so dangerous about living on credit card debt. You adjust to this living beyond your means lifestyle that is more expensive than what you can really afford, and that's why it can be so hard to get out of credit card debt. So if you can start being proactive now and work towards this future where you're not having to worry about credit card debt and you're doing what you want to do with your money, that's going to benefit you tremendously. But that does it for today's wrap up. Let me know down in the comments how you're being proactive with your money. And if you want to be more proactive with your money today, schedule a money talk using the link in the show notes, and I'd be happy to chat with you and figure out how you can make your money work for you and get ahead of all the marketing and sales strategies that are just trying to take money out of our wallet. But that does it for today's episode. And again, thank you to Grace for coming on the show, and thank you to each and every one of you for listening. We talked about a lot of great things today and even had a little bit of a tangent on grocery shopping and some of the ways that you can save money at the grocery store. Hint, avoid the dollar stores. They're not worth it. But today's episode was great. We talked about a lot of different ways to get out of those money pits that we find ourselves in, like credit card debt or living paycheck to paycheck. And then we moved all the way into how we can be optimistic and hopeful with our money. And one of the key things in there that I mentioned was community. Talking to other people about your money can be a massive motivator towards doing the right things and feeling like you're making progress, because it's so easy when you just get stuck in your own mind to feel like you're not making any progress, you're not making any sort of a difference, and then you go talk to someone else and they can help you realize that you are working hard and that you're doing the right things and that you just need to stick to your system and stick to your strategy. So I hope this episode was able to motivate all of you listening today, and please go out and share this episode with a friend or a family member, and then of course have a money talk about the thing that you learned from today's episode. But thank you for listening to today's episode. The best way to stay up to date and connected with all things Money Talk is to subscribe to the podcast. Have a question or a comment? You can find the link in the show notes to email me or leave a comment on Spotify or YouTube. And if you're looking to get started with budgeting, sign up for a Money Talk today. I'd love to work with you and help you with your budgeting. The link is in the show notes. And if you're a young adult or no one in your life who could benefit from some great financial planning advice, check out Financial Planning for Young Adults right where you're listening to this show. And remember, the best way to learn from today's episode is to go out and have a money talk about today's conversation with a fellow money buddy. And thank you for listening to this week's episode of Money Talk. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk. This show is provided for informational and entertainment purposes and may not be specific to your unique situation. Please be sure to do additional research before making any financial decisions.